Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied on account of sex. That's it. That is the intent of this.
The Equal Rights Amendment does not say anything about women. It puts sex in the Constitution, and sex has a lot of different definitions today than it did in the 1970s. Any protection for women would be gone. This is the unintended consequences of the ERA.
I believe we all ran for office because we want to make the city stronger. We don't all have the same vision of what that means, but there is a lot of common ground. At the city of Phoenix, most decisions are still made unanimously. I want to sit down with each colleague individually and talk about what I've learned during the campaign and hear their priorities. I think we're going to find a lot of overlap. I also believe that debate is healthy.
I hope that somebody does, if only to remind Republicans what it means to be conservative and what it means to be decent. I do hope that somebody runs. It won't be me.
And with us to talk about the new mayor of Phoenix, the Equal Rights Amendment, and more are Stan Barnes of Copper State Consulting and communications consultant Julie Earfley. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
All right, Stan, let's start with the Phoenix mayor's race. I just want to get Julie's take on Kate Gallego, but you first. A lot of Republicans, at least it seemed, were really coalescing behind Daniel Valenzuela. Did that make sense to you from a political perspective?
Yeah, it did make sense. It obviously didn't play out the way candidate Valenzuela wanted, but I think that was, as they say in consultancy, his lane to victory. It just wasn't enough. But we've all in this room seen that it's hard for a guy who on the center right to get elected mayor of Phoenix. Every now and then that lane gets tried and it seems to fail out. But when you put the erudite professional Kate Gallego against Danny Valenzuela, that was where Danny decided he had oxygen of which to make things happen. Didn't play out that way.
Julie, how strong a candidate was Kate Gallego? And did Valenzuela in any way hurt his future prospects by getting so much Republican support in this case?
Kate was a great candidate. I think you can't take away from that in her victory. I think Danny made a serious mistake, though. His team really branded him as this corporate Republican. Not just that he's a moderate, but really, you know, if you look at his endorsements and the people that he was standing with, they tended to be developers, utility monopolies, the billionaire class, I guess, would be the way to say it. And that's not a group that progressives tend to like, especially right now in a very polarized time. And the reality is that the city of Phoenix is becoming more and more progressive. So that's just not, in my opinion, a smart lane to go down. So I don't think that Danny Valenzuela has as big of an opportunity at this point as he did prior to this election.
Julie, were you surprised at the margin of victory in this race?
I wasn't, because I heard from so many progressives, what is going on with Danny Valenzuela? Like, I thought he was a Democrat. I thought he was a progressive. And the reality is him and Kate didn't really disagree on hardly any issues whatsoever. But his campaign really ran him, like I said, as more of a corporate Republican. And I think that scared away a lot of folks. And I think if you look at that difference, what you saw was likely that Danny Valenzuela picked up the Republican vote. Kate Gallego picked up the Democratic progressive vote.
Stan, were you surprised that the margin was as wide as it was?
I was. Mainly, Mark, because I had recently spoken with two different Kate Gallego supporters who are insider types, who I felt like had a good grasp on where things are. And they were both nervous that Valenzuela had gained on Gallego and was making this a real race. And were kind of wringing their hands about, well, this wasn't supposed to be this close. And so I converted that into, well, it is a close race. And turns out it wasn't. And so I was surprised by the margin.
Given the way that city government is set up in Phoenix, where the city manager really kind of runs the show and the mayor is a vote on the council, how much influence, how much difference do you think having Kate Gallego as mayor will make the way that the direction the city has been going the last few years?
Yeah, I think it will have a tangible difference, because so much is the politics of follow the leader, and the mayor has the highest profile and can set the tonation among the other members. Now that can be a pretty dysfunctional group. Those guys play sharp elbow politics, much different than even the legislature, which is an interesting thing. A lot sharper, a lot rougher, a lot more personal, and a mayor can have an oversized influence. She's, in my mind, more than just one vote. She really is, or the mayor is, somebody above all that and more important.
Julie, what do you think?
I think she will have obviously an outsized influence. I don't know that there's really going to be that much of a difference between the way she responds as mayor as Danny Valenzuela would have responded as mayor, to be quite honest. I think a lot of what happens in the next year or so is also going to depend on what happens in District 8 and 5 and who comes out ahead there. Because as Stan said, that council has been a little rough. If you've paid attention to the meetings, it's not functioning all that great. And I think that there could be even bigger opportunities for even more dysfunction. So I think that Kate really has her work cut out for her.
Julie, I had one more question to follow up on the progressive aspect of what you said. So let's say Valenzuela in his campaign had decided to double down on being a progressive, and it was progressive versus progressive. Would there have been enough votes out there in the city of Phoenix, or would we have seen more Republicans, more Libertarians basically sit out, and would we have seen the same kind of margin? Or should he have taken a chance to say, let me maybe outleft you on certain issues?
I don't know that it would have. I think that it actually could have made a difference, especially in the margin of victory. You know, it wasn't that long ago that if you had the support of both police and fire, right, that was a victory right there. And the fact that that seemed to make so little difference in this race, I think really spoke to really the polarization that's going on right now, the fact that this is a Trump election, even though it's a city election. And progressives are just so tired of sort of that corporate Republican mentality that I think that they were really responding to that. And I think if Danny would have come at it from a different angle, from this idea of, listen, politics are local, I've got the support of the people who are really running the city and working to make this city great, I think it would have been a different I think the outcome would have been different.
Stan, by virtue of the fact that she is now mayor-elect of Phoenix, and she's finishing Greg Stanton's term, but then there will be work to be done after that. How do you see Kate Gallego as someone as a future star for the Democrats? Is she going to maybe burn out after one term as mayor? Is this someone that you as a Republican would regard as maybe a future prospect?
Yes, I do. I always say that our Democrats in Arizona tend to have a pretty thin back bench. You easily run out of names before you run out of fingers on your hand when you're talking about it. I think Kate immediately is now on the list of prominent Democrats that the other Democrats will look to for future profile offices. I mean, after all, she is a great politician, and that cuts a lot of different ways depending on what viewpoint you have. But she's really good at fundraising. She doesn't sleep. You know, she's got that kind of energy that is so dedicated, and that's what you need in the modern world to win a statewide race. And so I think she's now in that first tier of the Democratic bench.
Stan, Julie, go ahead.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And I also don't think that Kate did anything that sort of casts her as this extreme progressive either, not by any means. In fact,
Kelly Ward seems to paint her that way.
Well, just wait until she runs for something else. I think that might come out.
But she never, she never panned police or fire. In fact, I think she'll work very complimentary with them. And they have said, you know, good things now that she's won as well. So I think that she definitely has a future beyond this.
Stan, do you see any hints of how the next election will go based on how this one went? As you mentioned, she's finishing out Greg Stanton's term. She has to do this again in just a couple of years.
Yeah, my guess, for what it's worth, is that she'll ease to victory when she runs again. I mean, that incumbency is just going to swallow all the money and all the effort. And I don't believe Danny Valenzuela is going to run again. And so it won't be a rematch. And I can't name somebody else that could give her any headache. So I think she'll probably just ease right into it.
What do you think, Julie?
I agree. I would agree with that.
So let's head to the legislature now. And one big issue this week, though there have been many, is the Equal Rights Amendment. A lot of people were excited about Arizona perhaps ratifying and making a big difference federally. Julie, so what do you make of where it went, the politics behind basically running aground?
Well, how ironic that the ERA legislation doesn't get a vote because of a couple of men who keep it from getting a hearing in committee, and it doesn't get a vote or debate on the floor during Women's History Month. So I just want to say that that's kind of ironic in all of it. I can't say that I'm shocked. I wish that I was. I think what happened on the Senate side was troubling. And I think for one senator, state senator in particular, it's going to have some long-term consequences. You had Michelle Ujanti-Rita, Heather Carter, Kate Brophy McGee, Tyler Pace as co-sponsors on the ERA. They had an opportunity to move that to a vote on the floor through a procedural motion. They voted against it. Heather Carter was gone. She had an excused absence. I think this makes a huge difference for Kate Brophy McGee because she is in a district that is moderate and is becoming more and more moderate slash progressive over time. And it's becoming more and more difficult for her to win re-election. And I think that this is going to play in that next election.
There's so much to say. I got to get my head in gear. Yes, no surprise. This is the Arizona legislature. It's behaving the way I think every political scientist who's watched it would expect it to behave. Just because time has passed doesn't mean the politics has changed around the ERA and what elected officials think it means. It still is full of things that perhaps it really is not. In the public square, to be for the ERA is, I think, and it translated as a very progressive thing. And most legislators aren't there yet. The point that Julie's making is a really interesting one. It's insider baseball, but it's really important insider baseball. Will you roll your leadership, your majority, in order to get a vote on an issue of this profile that you care about? And there were a lot of folks that thought they would do that. It has been done on other things, like Medicaid expansion, for instance. But perhaps the Republicans were trying to have it both ways on that topic. Maybe they're of two minds of it, trying to make a vote, but not that passionate about it. You know, there's a lot of ways to look at it, but as a science experiment, it was satisfying to watch play out.
Stan, I'm wondering if, you know, we're talking about sort of behind the scenes political maneuvering. Would it have been more effective for maybe the sponsors of the bill, including some of the Republican sponsors, to maybe lobby the Senate president to get it moved to a different committee? Would that have maybe had a better impact than asking Republicans to, as you say, roll their leadership on the floor over a procedural move?
Yeah, I think in retrospect, it probably would have been. It would have put the pressure on Senator Fan, the Senate president. To put the ERA into a separate committee would be a signal by her that she's giving it a life, perhaps an artificial push that you don't give normal things. So that in itself would have been a big ask. That wasn't a simple ask. It's probably maybe it even happened. I don't know. But it's in the same cul-de-sac that other things like that have been in.
Julie, final thoughts on this before the break?
I think that it actually did happen, that they were pushing to try and get this in any committee not chaired by Eddie Farnsworth, to be quite honest. It didn't happen. And I think that the lack of push from, like I said, particularly the female senators, I think that that's going to come back and haunt them. I think it's really not going to be that big of a deal for Michelle Ujanti-Rita in her district. Like I said, Heather Carter didn't have an opportunity to be there. But I do think for Kate Brophy McGee, it makes a difference.
That's Julie Earthly. Also here is Stan Barnes with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. We're in the midst of the Friday Newscap, which continues after this. It is the Friday Newscap here on 91.5 KJZZ with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. With us, our communications consultant, Julie Earthly, and the man behind Copper State Consulting, Mr. Stan Barnes. So, Stan, let's talk about Martha McSally and why she didn't go along with 12 other Republicans in voting down President Trump's emergency declaration. What is that? What is she showing there? What does that do for her?
I have a simple answer for you. She wants to be reelected to the U.S.
Senate. So that's going to help her get reelected.
That is great. There's a surprised look on your face. Your listeners can't see it, but I can see it. She doesn't want a primary. She doesn't want to replay the Kelly Ward experience. She's got her fingers crossed that the right is not going to come at her. This would have invited someone into the race, perhaps.
But anyone viable, that's the question.
Fair enough. But the it's a calculate, and there's always a possibility she believes in the vote she casts. So give her that credit. She may think it's the right thing to do. You ought to level that out. But it, assuming it's a purely political play, I think backing the president when he says this is really about do you want border security or not is better than I'm defending a constitutional maneuver.
Now, I didn't study the safety of the seats of the Republicans who decided to do this, but there were some pretty conservative folks in there. And McSally, is she going to have to try to straddle all sides again? Because I think, isn't that part of what got her in trouble against Kyrsten Sinema?
Yeah, fair enough. I think what got her in trouble was she ended up being too negative too often. But she is every political figure in statewide in Arizona has to do some sort of straddle, as you say. You can't be David Garcia and be all left, and you can't be Kelly Ward and be all right. Mm-hmm. You've got to be somewhere else. And Martha McSally, I think by nature is that way. And so I think if I were her advisor on this vote, she made the right vote.
Julie, as a Democrat, are you pleased that McSally went this way, and are you pleased that Kyrsten Sinema ended up voting the way she did?
Well, I'm definitely not pleased with where McSally went. Yes, I'm definitely pleased with where Kyrsten Sinema went. I would disagree with Stan on a couple of things. So one, I agree that I think that this keeps her from getting a primary challenger. And I think that she's going to continue to vote with Trump on these more contentious issues, and that will keep her from having that primary. However, I think, you know, Arizonans want mavericks. They want people who aren't afraid to disagree with their party from time to time. And I think that that was the key for Kyrsten Sinema. And I think that that's going to be the key for Mark Kelly or Ruben Gallego when it comes to this next challenge. I think that Martha McSally didn't perhaps learn the lesson that she should have learned in the last election, and that's that I think voters are more forgiving of somebody who takes a difficult vote from time to time versus somebody who is just a check on the president.
Stan, do you think that McSally's vote, again, assuming let's give her the credit that she believes that she made the right vote. We'll leave that and make that a given. Does it help? You mentioned that you think it helps her potentially stave off a primary. Does it help her or hurt her, do you think, in a general election?
I think it net helps her. I get that it cuts against her as well. But she's going to be riding shotgun with the president of the United States whether she wants to or not. He's going to be on the ballot, and he's going to spend a lot of money in Arizona, and she's going to be the Republican nominee. And I think strategically, to Julie's point, she'll need to find somewhere to put oxygen between her and the president. And I'm sure she's thinking about where that will be. But in the meantime, on border security, the president's signature issue with him on the ballot, I don't know how she could have done anything else and calculate that it was a better deal for her.
Julie, does this become a campaign issue in the general election, do you think?
Definitely. Yeah, because regardless of whether it's Mark Kelly or Ruben Gallego, both have come out very strongly, you know, against this. And so I think that they definitely will talk about it. And I think whoever the Republican nominee is for president is going to be talking about it as well. And they're going to bring it up not just as, you know, a border issue. They're going to talk about it from a constitutional standpoint. And so I think that you're going to have McSally on the fence for that.
You said whoever the Republican nominee
picked
for
up on
president.
That,
you
yeah.
said
Sorry,
Republican.
Democrat.
But there's some irony there. The poetry, there's poetry there. It is going to be Donald Trump, but the Democratic thing is going to end up being its own flavor and dynamic. And if True. It's as far left as it might be, oh, my goodness. So there you go.
So let me ask you about the what you guys were talking about earlier about the issue. Is this a border security issue or a constitutional check issue? Stan, I imagine if you try to make an issue out of preserving the Constitution and sort of that kind of like procedural thing, don't voters' eyes just kind of glaze over on that?
Yeah, I think that appeals to the Jeff Flake constituency, which is about six people spread out over Maricopa County somewhere. So, yeah, that's not a runnable thing as a campaigning U.S. senator. The voter that matters votes with his or her heart, not with her head. And that's where the elections are won or lost. And to appeal to the intellect on something that is, you know, almost on the top of a pin when it comes to it's a granular thing, it just doesn't translate very well. She made the right choice. I mean, but all these choices have impacts, and then none of them are pure, but she made the right choice.
Julie, our last couple of minutes, you invoked the second Gallego of our segment today, Ruben Gallego. Do you think he's going to run for Senate?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
What?
Yes.
Really? Really? I don't think he is.
Really?
Yeah, He's got a life. He's got one of these rare things, a guaranteed House seat for the rest of his life. And he can be the Speaker of the United States House. He can be the impact player for Arizona when it comes to Washington, D.C., like Ed Pastore was, like Dennis DeConcini was. But I cannot believe he's going to wager that in what I consider a long shot, the desire to be the U.S. Senator.
Boy, Julie, that's interesting because Mark Kelly, many would say, has the greatest story one could ever tell. And yet Gallego has been on the ground, someone who's worked in politics and clearly likes to mix it up. Mm-hmm. So how do you see that?
I think it's interesting because I would agree with Stan. I personally think that he shouldn't run, but I think that he's going to. I mean, all signs really point to it. He's got a lot of people pushing him in that direction. He's certainly talking as if he's going to run. He's definitely made those comments to people over and over the last few months. Perhaps he will change his mind. Someone will convince him to stay and do exactly what Stan is saying. But I think he really wants to run, to be quite honest. And I think that it isn't the best scenario in some respects for Democrats because I do think that it'll be a rough primary, and I think it'll give the advantage to McSally.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm hoping the congressman's listening right now when I tell him, please run, because as a McSally supporter, that's going to really help in the general that Democrats come through a bloody primary.
I think it will. And I think it helps McSally as well if it's Ruben Gallego.
Yes, I do too.
Well, it's interesting you say that because when you talk to a lot of Democrats, especially Democratic officials, and I, to an extent, they probably have to say this, but they're very much of the mind that the competitive primary is a good thing. It gets ideas out there, battle tests particular candidates. Sounds like you don't necessarily buy into that.
I think sometimes it works. The reality is, though, is that I think it works in races where maybe there's not as much media attention, because then you're going to get a lot more attention if you've got this competitive primary. There's going to be a ton of attention here. And Mark Kelly has enough money to be able to buy the kind of paid media that he needs to get his message out. There's really no need for it. I think he'd have to spend too much money going against Ruben Gallego versus going against McSally.
Do either of you think that what Congressman Gallego could be thinking about is banking on McSally winning next year and then maybe going forward in 2 years?
You mean running now?
Gallego not running now, assuming that Kelly will lose to McSally, and then Gallego is the nominee in 2 years.
You're making a very good point. He's got two bites at it. And that's another calculus that tells me he's going to stay in the seat he's in. Yes, I think the answer is yes to that.
Well, is there danger also for Gallego? Because we heard Grant Woods was kind of living the life of Stan Barnes, which is this life of leisure. And it was one of those but it almost felt like Grant Woods did not want to be the guy to criticize Mark Kelly, who did all the things for his wife and who was an astronaut. And I wonder, is that a calculation as well, Julie, for Gallego? Because Mark Kelly, at least at this point, looks like he is spit-shined and ready to go and as pure as you can get.
Right. Mark Kelly doesn't have a voting record. That's a big positive. I think that, you know, I think Ruben is thinking about these things. I just hope that the team around him is also considering these things. I mean, sometimes we don't get the best advice from our advisors, so I think that that actually plays into this decision as well.
All right, Stan, so you think he's not going to run?
I think he's not going to run, and if he does, he's going to run to his left, and he's going to say he's not a real Democrat, and he's going to set the markers for his own loss in the general.
Okay. That is Stan Barnes of Copper State Consulting, also with us communications consultant Julie Earfley. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at the show@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.